Again, this call is being recorded. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may disconnect at any time. If you would like to speak, you can virtually raise your hand by pressing 5-star on your dial pad. You will then be called upon in the order your hand is raised. Please take a moment to enter your speaker code if you've not already done so. Please remember to mute your phones until speaking. Again, please remember to mute your phones until speaking. Again, my name is Joseph Dorian. Good afternoon and welcome to a duly noticed meeting for the Stakeholder Advisory Board to the Governor's Office of Emergency Relief and Recovery. The creation of the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery occurred when Governor Sununu issued Executive Order 2020-06. That order is publicly available on the Governor's website. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the Board, is open to the public, and will be run in a manner compliant with RSA 91A. We have someone on the phone taking minutes, which will be posted to the Gopher webpage. Again, today's meeting is also being recorded. I will help facilitate today's meeting. Because the board is meeting by phone, under RSA 91A, there are a few initial logistics that we need before I turn it over to Chair Donnelly Loza. First, each of us must state our names, where we are located, and who is with us. As we move through our agenda today, each board member and anyone else speaking is asked to identify themselves before speaking. Should you choose to take any votes today, they must be done by roll call. I'll start with the meeting attendance roll call. I am Joe Dorian, Deputy Director of the Gopher in the Gopher Office, 1 Eagle Square in Concord. I'm joined by
Lisa English with Gopher.
Kate Giaquinto, also with Gopher.
Sean Thomas with Gopher.
Rhonda Hensley with Gopher.
Wendy Gilman with Gopher.
And we are all appropriately socially distanced in a very large conference room here at the Department of Business and Economic Affairs. Now for the members of the committee, continuing with the roll call, Bill Ardinger.
Thank you, Joe. This is Bill Ardinger. I'm at my home in my home office, and no one is near me, so I've got good social distancing. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Dean Christen.
Good afternoon, Joe. This is Dean Christen. I am at the authority, New Hampshire Housing Authority's offices in Bedford, and I am alone.
Thank you, Dean. Jim Jalbert.
Good afternoon, Joe. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jim Jalbert. I am located at my business office at 185 Grafton Drive in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I am alone.
Thank you, Jim. Amy LaBelle. We'll come back to Amy. Al Letizio, Jr.
Hi, Joe, and hi, board members. This is Al Letizio, Jr., and I am working alone here from my home office in Windham, New Hampshire.
Thank you, Al. Donnelly Lozo. Donnelly, are you muted?
Yes, Donnelly was muted. Hi, it's Donnelly Lozo. I am here in my office in Manchester. Thank you.
Thank you, Donnelly.
And I'm alone.
Scott Mason.
This is Scott Mason. I'm in my farm office in North Stratford, New Hampshire, and my wife is in the other room.
Thank you, Scott. And Amy, if you have joined the call, could you please press 5-star? We'll continue with the roll. Michelle McEwen.
Good afternoon. This is Michelle McEwen. I'm in my office at the hospital here in Plymouth, New Hampshire, and I'm alone.
Thank you, Michelle. Nancy Merrill.
Yes, hi. This is Nancy Merrill, and I'm at my office at 14 North Street in Claremont, and I'm alone.
Thank you, Nancy. Holly Novoletsky.
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Holly Novoletsky. I am in my office in Greenland, New Hampshire, and I'm alone.
Thank you, Holly. Kathleen Reardon.
Hi, this is Kathleen Reardon. I'm in my home in New Boston, alone in this room.
Thank you, Kathleen. Benjamin Wilcox.
Good afternoon. I'm currently at Cranmore Mountain Resort in North Conway, and I'm alone in my office.
Thank you, Benjamin. Donnelly, with the roll call completed. Oh, I'm sorry. Amy LaBelle, if you were able to join us, if you could press 5-star just so we can complete the roll.
Yes, can you hear me?
Can you hear me, Joe? Yep.
Wonderful. Amy LaBelle from LaBelle Winery, Restaurant, and Event Center, and I'm in my home office on my own.
Thank you, Amy. And again, if other folks have joined, this meeting is being recorded, and this is a duly noticed meeting for the Stakeholder Advisory Board. Donnelly, with the roll call completed, everyone is in attendance. We are ready to continue.
Thank you, Joe. So we, as discussed at our last meeting, will open today's meeting with a presentation from Gopher, first on the purpose, and then a presentation on what the federal COVID-19 funds are available. So with that, Joe, I'll turn it over to, I believe, Lisa English.
Absolutely. Again, this is Joe Dorian. I'm just going to chat a little bit about the purpose. Just to, we put together just a, lines together for the board on the purpose. The Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery, known as Gopher, immediately began working towards its mission to find expedient, fair, and transparent ways to distribute the $1.25 billion from the federal government while guarding against fraud, waste, and abuse in line with all federally mandated guidelines and regulations. The office is committed to finding both proven and innovative mechanisms to fulfill its mission in an expedited way to ensure the health of the state citizens, businesses, localities, and the state's economy as a whole. Now I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Lisa English, to go over some details with the presentation. Lisa. Great.
Thank you, Joe. This is Lisa English. So I'm going to talk a little bit about other funds setting aside the $1.25 billion. And the reason for that is understanding what other funds are available for the various sectors, I think, will help inform our decisions to make sure that that we are using the funds in the most efficient and effective way as possible, especially where there may be some funding for certain sectors that I think it will help us make our decisions. One note, though, these numbers sound huge. And to the extent you've listened to some of the presentations before the Legislative Advisory Board, the losses are certainly huge. So when we hear something about, for example, hospitals getting, you know, some millions of dollars, that has to be looked at in the context of the incredible losses. So I just put that out there for context because I think it's important for us to remember. So the CARES Act provides a number of funding opportunities for the state as well as for certain industries and providers to help the states navigate through the COVID-19 public health emergency. There's a handout that hopefully everyone got that's labeled federal funding opportunities related to COVID-19. This is a draft. Everything is changing. I mean, things are changing every single day. Someday the word draft will be removed off of this. It certainly is a public document, but I want to keep adding to it so that so we can provide an accurate reflection. I'm not going to go through every program, but I'm going to go quickly through a number of them. And if Joe could kick me, if we weren't 6 feet away, he could kick me when I hit the 15-minute mark, but so I don't take too much of your time. So the biggest one that we've heard about, setting aside the flexible funding, is the Public Health and Social Services Emergency Fund, which has been called a lot of different things, the Hospital Fund, the Marshall Plan for Hospitals. I've heard it framed in a lot of different ways. This is $100 billion that are available nationally for grants for healthcare providers. That's not just hospitals, but includes not-for-profit health providers, Medicare and Medicaid enrolled suppliers, and other institutional providers. the grants are supposed to cover unreimbursed COVID-19 related expenses or lost revenue. The grants may be used for building temporary structures, leasing property, medical supplies, PPE, emergency operations center, and preparing for a surge. So New Hampshire has received some of these funds. There was one-third, or 30% of the $100 billion was dispersed last week, and that totaled, for New Hampshire healthcare providers, $164,580,386. And those funds were to the benefit of 1,445 healthcare providers. The disbursement formula was focused on providers' proportional share of Medicare fee-for-service reimbursements. That means that people that were a heavy Medicaid biller or other had other types of payment mechanisms may not have received much or any of those funds. There's another, announced last night, another $20 billion is going to go out generally based on net patient revenue. So payments will be made, half of that, approximately half of that $20 billion will be out on Friday and another half next week. Another $10 billion was announced yesterday to focus on providers in areas particularly impacted by COVID-19. And so those funds continue to go out. It sounds like a large number, but as we have heard, to the extent you've had the opportunity to listen to some of the healthcare presentations or see the news, there are certainly huge challenges for all of our healthcare providers. Another opportunity for healthcare providers is not a grant program, but is the Accelerated and Advanced Payments Program for providers and suppliers. This allows providers that bill Medicare to request up to 100% of the Medicare payment for a three-month period, with some entities entitled to a larger period, and then they pay it back over time. So that's to help immediate cash flow, but has to be, is essentially a loan. Some other healthcare buckets that exist that aren't on the chart are the telehealth and rural health activities, and I'm working on getting more information on those programs and how they are helping some of our New Hampshire healthcare providers. There's behavioral health and substance use disorders treatment funding. The legislation provides $425 million to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration for mental health and substance use disorders treatment for that. So that provision includes $50 million for suicide prevention and $100 million for SAMHSA programs generally. New Hampshire applied for and received a $2 million grant, and that means I will be able to update this chart to include that particular funding. Another thing that's missing from the chart is the funding related to long-term supports and services. And that's something I should have the details shortly, but there were emergency appropriations for the Administration for Community Living, Aging, and Disabilities Program, which may provide funding for activities under the Older Americans Act. That includes supportive services, nutrition services, support services for family caregivers, elder rights protection activities, including the long-term ombudsman program under the OAA. So I'll get more of a sense of how that is, what kind of funding is headed to New Hampshire, and we'll update this document accordingly. Back to the chart, Head Start programs, which I hope I have on here, I may not. Head Start programs, $750 million is allocated to Head Start agencies. Each agency will receive, or I hope received, although I don't know, a supplemental payment based on the number of enrolled children served by its agency compared to the total number enrolled nationally. Housing. The legislation, the CARES Act, allocated $4 billion nationally for the homeless assistance grants. $2 billion will be distributed in a formula to states through the Emergency Solutions Grant. And as you can see on the chart, that has worked out to $3.7 million for New Hampshire. There's also $1.25 billion for tenant-based rental assistance, and that's dealing with the voucher programs, including mainstream voucher programs. And it certainly is possible that we can get more information from part of our team here on the Stakeholders Advisory Board as to what the numbers for New Hampshire are as far as that particular fund. Other funding, heating assistance. There was an additional $900 million allocated for LIHEAP, and that translated into $5.54 million for New Hampshire. I'm not going to go through the numbers related to SNAP and the Community Assistance Program, but certainly there's been supplements there, as well as funding for child welfare. Couple of other mechanisms. I want to talk about the Payroll Protection Program. That has certainly gotten a lot of press as far as how the Payroll Protection Program went out. But we found some data that suggested that over $2 billion came to New Hampshire to the benefit of 11,582 New Hampshire businesses. The document that I sent has a number of other mechanisms that are designed to assist with cash flow. An example is the delay of payment of employer payroll taxes. It's not a grant, but in the emergency situation, it may be something that can help out the businesses. So this is far from comprehensive, but you get the idea of what kinds of funding is out there, and we can dig in deeper to the extent we're looking at a particular sector. So that is my 10 minutes because I spoke very quickly. If anyone has a question, please hit 5-star.
Yep. Thank you, Lisa. Again, for those who might have just joined us, this is a duly noticed meeting to the Stakeholder Advisory Board, to the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery. As Lisa mentioned, please hit 5-star to raise your hand, and again, this meeting is being recorded. We have the first question from Al Letizio Jr. Al?
Thanks, Joe, and thanks, Lisa. I have a line item on my list here that says Child Care and Development Block Grant, and it looks like $3.5 billion nationally and just under $7 million to the state of New Hampshire. Can you give us a sense as to what that is intended to be used for?
Absolutely. That funding may be used for childcare, including providing funding to keep a center open, as well as funding to allow a center to reopen. And I don't have the details in front of me, but New Hampshire, certainly with its emergency childcare program, I think has been leveraging child care funds in order to ensure that there is available child care for our health care workers and other essential workers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we go to Bill Ardinger with a question. And again, 5-star to raise your hand to ask a question. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you, Joe. And thank you, Lisa, for presenting this kind of sources of funds available to New Hampshire and its government to help with the response to this crisis. I guess over the next period of time, our group will be hearing from people who could be recipients, which would be the uses of funds, but it's really important that we know the sources, and I thank you for doing it. I have two questions. One, do you anticipate that you will continue to maintain a kind of running list that gets, you know, updated with more current information, that has better better targeted information that's really precise on you know, how what New Hampshire's share is and what the current status is of spending? That's the first question. And then the second question would be, do you anticipate that the Gopher will be establishing a working relationship with Legislative Budget Assistant Office in the legislature? Michael Kane is the head of that office currently.
so that the legislative branch and the executive branch are properly sharing this information to keep it current together. Thank you very much for letting me ask two questions.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bill. Yes, I plan to maintain this with an eye of don't let the perfect get in the way of the good, because like I said before, and as you all know, things are changing very quickly. One example of data that I would really like to have, the website that noted how many New Hampshire businesses received paycheck benefits under the Paycheck Protection Plan, it also had a breakdown by industry, but nationally. So we're trying to get information about what is the sector breakdown in New Hampshire, because I can imagine that that's very different in different states, both, you know, because of access to a bank that was able to work through these before the funding ran out, as well as, you know, what industry is really most relevant, or what industries and sectors are most relevant in a particular state. So yes, I will continue to gather this information and get it in a way that will be very easy for the public to access. And as far as working with Michael Caine at the LBA, absolutely. I think that we are going to make sure that we're, making sure that we're sharing information, public information, and just establishing our lines of communication so that we can move through this process as efficiently as possible.
Thank you.
Thanks. I think we have the next question from Michelle McEwen. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi, yes, thank you. I was just wondering, you know, certainly the Public Health and Social Emergency Fund and the Payroll Protection Fund are funds that have already been dispersed, and as we start hearing from various organizations and sectors, have the other funds been distributed, or are they all in a different state if some have, some haven't been? Just trying to wonder whether or not there may be funding available to them that hasn't been distributed yet.
I think, thank you for that question. I think it's a mixed bag. So even with the Public Health and Social Services Emergency Fund, only $30 billion is a phrase I never thought would come out of my mouth, but only $30 billion have gone out so far. Another disbursement's going out Friday and next week, and there still will be funding remaining that I think they're trying to get out by the end of next week. So not all of that has gone. Some of these I just don't know. For example, Donna Lee may have some information on the Community Development Block Grant. I think that many of these are in process. So as far as the timing, it's not clear to me. And like I said, with regard to some of the additional funding, such as the rural health care funding, that's something I haven't been able to track down, but I think I have a path to go down to get that information.
Well, it wasn't about future funding. I'm just looking, for example, the Community Development Block Grant. New Hampshire has $7.5 million. Has that $7.5 million been distributed or not yet?
Donna Lee, do you know if the Community Development Block Grant funding has gone out?
I don't believe it has.
Okay. So, yeah, some of these things, so, for example, I think there's some funding that will come online, I don't know the timeline, but related to the Older Americans Act. So that's funding that I'm going to be trying to track down. But that's a really good point. Obviously, I've been paying close attention to the Public Health and Social Services emergency funding, but I will try to identify if things have gone out and if they have not. It's a very, very good question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. And again, if you would like to ask a question, virtually raise your hand by pressing 5-star on your dial pad. Again, that's 5-star. And we'll give it a moment. There's usually a delay in the system, so just give us a moment. We'll see if there's other questions.
And while we're waiting, I'm just going to add one more thing that's in the works. I assume many of us saw the news reports that the payroll protection program is getting additional funding, and that included, I believe, a total of $380 billion, including $60 for smaller businesses. But that also included $75 billion in what was described as a hospital funding. That's not all the way through the process, I don't believe, but there was also $25 billion for testing.
Okay. Again, 5-star on your dial pad to raise your hand. We'll give another moment. Okay, Donna Lee, we're looking at our system here. Nobody's raised their hand using 5-star. So thank you very much, Donna Lee, and the board for allowing us to take a few moments and provide some information. Hopefully that was helpful. And Donna Lee, I'd like to turn it over to you, and thank you again.
Thanks, Joe. You know, while I have the opportunity, I'll just mention that the Community Development Block Grant, many of you may know this, but some of you may not, comes directly to communities that are direct recipients, so like Manchester, Nashua, Portsmouth, and then it goes to the counties for the balance of state for some of that. So that'll be that's normally distributed in that manner and through their process, just so folks understand. Sometimes it just sounds like this is a whole lot of money going out. Well, it is a whole lot of money going out. But anyway, okay, back to the agenda. I want to take a moment to just welcome Holly and Amy to the group. I think that they are probably now up to speed and caught up to where we all are. And the next item on the agenda for discussion purposes is the format for our verbal presentations from folks. All of you should have received the questions, the final questions. I am receiving from almost everybody the at least the 3 contacts and then some that you're all planning to reach out to with those questions. And then what I'd like to do is talk about how folks will present next week. I think we should be talking about a timeline in the sense of both how long out are we going to go with this, but also how much time are we going to be able to give each presenter to be able to get as much information and opportunity as possible. So right now we have, I sent out a copy right before the meeting opened of the list that I have received to date, with the exception of Jim Jalbert, whose information did get here in time but just didn't get in the file fast enough. So we currently have about 68 contacts on this list right now. So I want to be conscious of understanding that we probably cannot hear from 68 people and be able to get our work done in a way that's meaningful to the Gopher Committee. I would suggest that we look at grouping people in a way on the same day that makes sense, so we don't go from one extreme to the other, so that we have a chance to be thoughtful about a particular industry or two in the same day. I also want to make sure that people understand we're shooting to have the website up and working by Friday, so that people have a chance to go right online, respond to those questions, and all of us will get copies of them. So we want to make sure that people don't feel like it's an invitation-only committee. The invitations are really about who comes to present, but everybody is welcome to submit information to us, and we prefer it in this 11-question format, which I think helps to keep us very focused in our work. So I would suggest, and then we'll open it up for people to weigh in, I would suggest that we look at talking to folks in 15-minute increments so that we have their written testimony ahead, so everybody has a chance to read it, that we then give them 3 or 4 minutes to kind of overall present on those 11 questions, and then open it up for questions from members of the board to make sure that we have clarity on the information that we've received. That way we could dedicate an hour to an hour and a half, depending on what else might be on our agenda, to have folks come and talk to us. So in a perfect world, you know, that's 4 per hour. So what do other members think? Anybody, Joe?
Donna Lee, we have a hand raised by Al Letizio Jr. Go ahead, Al.
Donnelly, I think that's a great format, what you suggested, and I think the 15-minute time frame is great. It makes it easier for presenters so that they're not trying to fill content up that they feel as though might be necessary. I think if everyone has 15 minutes, and up to 15 minutes, doesn't mean they have to use the whole 15, but if during that period of time they can get through the points that are most important and give us the information that we need to communicate where they are at, I think we're good. So I think you're right on target, and I would actually say I'd like to make a motion to accept your recommendation for that and move forward with it.
Thanks, Al. We'll take that motion. We'll look for a second, and we'll continue to make sure we're open for discussion until everybody gets to weigh in.
Second, Jim Jalbert.
Thank you. Further discussion.
Donnelly, this is Joe. We have a few people with raised hands. Would you like to for us to let you know
yes.
who's next?
Yes, please. So we're
Very
open
good.
For discussion. Thank you.
Awesome. Nancy Merrill. Go ahead, Nancy.
Yes, hi. I agree with what you're presenting in terms of I think 5 minutes is plenty if somebody's presented us with written documentation. I had another, maybe a broader question, though. It looks to me like a lot of people that are on our list are also testifying at the Legislative Advisory Committee. Are we going to have issues with asking people to present something to us if they've already done so? Is there going to be any confusion out there? General question.
Well, so I would say that the difference in presentations between our two groups, I think, is that we're very focused on 11 specific questions, and we're trying to keep people on track with just those 11 questions. It's certainly not lost on me that they're also testifying in the legislature, and some upwards of an hour at a time. So what I want to concentrate on, and I don't see a, you know, coming to a final decision today in our meeting, but I'd like to concentrate on trying to include people that have not yet testified in a public setting, that even if they have presented, that they still respond to the 11 questions. So I know the Hospital Association, for example, has presented to the legislative group. I'm still reaching out. Like I've reached out to St. Joe's Hospital because I'd like their perspective. I'm sure it's different than, you know, Michelle's Hospital at Speer and different than at Dartmouth. Would we like the Hospital Association to answer those 11 questions? Absolutely. Do we want to invite them to come and verbally present, or would we rather use those 15 minutes for somebody else that hasn't had a forum? I think that that's part of what we should consider as we're determining who will come before us. I also think it would be helpful for us to, you know, review those minutes if you can't find that serious amount of time to be able to listen to the other committee and do our committee work, because that's 5 days a week, and you know, all of us are still working our jobs. but I think looking at who's been presenting and that sort of thing, and you know, Nancy, it makes me think that it might be a good idea for me on this contact list that we're developing that should be completed by the end of the day today. I'll add a column to say whether they have or haven't presented, and that might help us with some direction.
Yeah. Yeah, thank
okay.
you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Donnelly, we have a hand raised from Ben Wilcox.
Hi, Donnelly, this is Ben.
Hi, Ben.
So basically, I support what you outlined, and that's what I was raising my hand. And also, I appreciate Nancy's question because that was my second part question about people that have already testified and presented at the legislative because I know, for example, one I had presented was New Hampshire Restaurant and Lodging, and they had quite an extensive presentation yesterday that I caught. And so that sort of answers that they would be potentially included, but we'd be looking for people first that maybe we haven't, that the legislation hasn't heard from.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks, Beth.
So otherwise, I'm supportive. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Donnelly, we have a question from Bill Ardinger.
Hi, Bill. Or maybe not.
Hello?
There he is.
Sorry.
Hi, Bill.
Sorry about that, folks. I was just dealing with a quick problem there. So I wanted to say I really like the approach of making folks come in to testify, present their issues to us, and really rely on their written materials as their opening statement, and really allow the people on this advisory board to ask questions that they think are important. That is to some extent, it may be a more efficient use of their time and our time and the Gopher staff's time. So great idea, fully support the motion. The second point I wanted to raise relates to something that Nancy asked. I think that in many cases, the presentations to the legislative group have been about a statement of general need. In some sense, our guidelines that we worked on tries to take that to another level, which is to help these affected organizations and sectors, economic sectors, to help us think programmatically. What would the details of a specific, you know, possible allocation of funds look like? How much money? I've had folks that I've called and talked to pursuant to our last meeting say, are we really just supposed to come and talk about need, or are we supposed to go further and suggest, you know, an actual amount and type of program that might be, useful and justify a recommendation in favor of a program? And I think I've said, I think that the guidelines nudge you beyond just need to an affirmative proposal and thought process. And so I very much think having the BFA come speak to the legislative group or the charitable foundation come speak to the legislative group tomorrow, which they're going to do, is one thing. But having them go through and directly address those guidelines will produce, I think, important supplemental differences. So I don't think it will be necessarily a bad thing. And I found that people who are presenting, they actually want the opportunity to present again and think that it will sharpen the presentation. So that's my comment. I strongly support this and thank you.
Thanks, Bill. And I don't want to leave the impression, and I don't know that Nancy would have thought the same based on the way she asked her question. I don't think anything says we won't have them present if they've already presented. I think we absolutely should get their response to the 11 questions, and I think based on that, we may very well want them to come in and talk to us. But I do think that it would be valuable to look at some of the groups that may not have had an opportunity yet to present as well. So I think if we balance it, I think it'll be pretty well-rounded. At least that's what I have in my mind. Joe, do we have anybody else?
Donnelly, and again, folks can hit 5-star on their dial pad, and we have Dean with a question.
Hi, Donnelly.
Hi, Dean.
I had two or three things, and some of them have been covered, so I'll be very quick. I agree with the time limit approach and having people send written comments ahead of time so that we can use the time for questions. I also agree with Bill's comment about encouraging people to give us some detail about specifically what funds would be used for and how they could be deployed, particularly within the timeline, as opposed to very general statements of need. And I think I heard you say early on that we were going to try to do this with what I guess I would describe as a sector focus for each meeting, or at least half of each meeting or something like that. And I agree with that because I think that would focus our attention and our questions more effectively. So if you brought people in from a particular sector for a particular day, we could be better prepared, and I think it would be more useful for our time than having lots of different areas all at once. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, that is what I meant. Great.
Donnelly, we have a question from Holly Noveletsky.
Thank you very
much. Hi, Holly.
Hi, thank you. And some of this may have been answered because I'm new. I do agree with the presentation format. I think 15 minutes is perfect if we get to review it ahead of time. What is the time frame for completing this whole process of hearing all the presentations? And the second part of that would be the number of days that will be dictated to the presentations, the number of categories that of industries may dictate the number of days for presentation. So what's the time frame?
I would agree with that. So let me break it into a couple of parts, and I'm sure that if others want to jump in with their thoughts about it, including the Gopher staff, I'd appreciate it. But overall, when we look at how quickly these funds need to go out, how quickly decisions need to be made, carefully, but quickly, because there is a clock of December of 2020, and we want to be able to help people as soon as possible, I think our work has to be done very efficiently. Having said that, I don't think we know yet when this committee or this board stops its work. I think it's going to be dictated by the information we're getting and how much more information the Gopher staff might need to be able to complete their work. I also don't think so we started by saying if the legislative group is meeting, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and they're meeting from 1 o'clock, sometimes right till 5 or later, we wanted to focus in on Tuesday and Thursday, two-hour meetings. And part of the thinking behind that was, from my perspective, and I said this early in a meeting, it is very difficult, this method by which we're conducting business, and for any number of reasons, because it's hard for everybody to participate. And this group was chosen in a way that is a nice cross representation of people with networks in many different ways. And so I'd like the committee members to feel a purpose and to take responsibility for their contacts, collecting the written information, sometimes summarizing it for the group at a meeting when you can't have 12 people come that day, but you've gotten information from one sector, and by reading the work, you've determined that there are things that you should, call our attention to, even though we're all going to have the same information, no matter whose contact it was, and we're all going to have everything ahead of time. Let's just say, for an example, you reach out to Joe's Nuts and Bolts, and they answer the questions. We're not sure if they're going to be asked to come in present, but they've answered the questions. They send them back to you because you're the one who reached out. You read through it. You notice that you don't understand clearly the response to number 5. You may reach back out to Joe and say, "So, when I was reading your information, I'm not sure I really understand the point that you're making in number 5. Could you walk me through that?" Which gives you an opportunity to understand it better, because likely members on the board might have those same questions. So allowing time for us to engage with our contacts, chase down them if we need more, more clarification, that sort of thing. I want to spend time doing that so that we can get as much information in as possible. We may choose to extend, a couple of days' meetings longer to fit people in that we really want to hear. And I haven't yet dug into the list of contacts in a way to organize them by sectors and that sort of thing. And some of us are going to reach out far beyond. So I guess that's a long answer to your question, which tells you, right now, we don't really know all the answers. I think it's going to become clear as we do our work.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else want to weigh in on that? Answer it better than I.
Donnelly, okay. we have a hand raised from Jim Jalbert. And again, if folks would like to provide comments, raise your hand by pressing 5-star on your dial pad. Go ahead, Jim.
First of all, Donnelly, great with the process. Second of all, in regards to people testifying tomorrow and who have testified in the past, one of the people that I put on the list, Crossroads, is testifying on behalf of the Charitable Foundation tomorrow. And they're talking in general terms about what's going on in their world and explaining that to the committee. And I think that I want to make sure we don't put organizations like that to the back of the list simply because they're going to committee tomorrow at the request of the foundation. I think that these are the very people who need the help the most when you get to their own individual story, and they need to have the same accessibility as anybody else. There are a lot of New Hampshire restaurant. All of these folks are going to bring their own folks in to help plead their case, if you will. And so I want to make sure everybody gets the opportunity.
I don't disagree. And I just think we have to, I think those of you that have your lists need to advocate to us just like you just did. They're going there wearing this hat. We'd like them to come here wearing that hat. And again, I don't think it's going to be hard. I'm just saying that I think that we don't want to lose sight of the ones who've not had an opportunity to be heard, whether it's the same or different. And I just think we balance it. And I think members of the board have to, you know, make sure that we understand why it's important for somebody to come back again and be focused the way, you know, Bill and I have talked about.
Well, Donnelly, I bring that up only because I know that the Charitable Foundation, who, you know, I have a great deal of respect for, and Dick and his team do an incredible job, they're bringing in a cross-section. And a lot of these people are going to need help, and they may not necessarily get it from the foundation, but they're there to talk about why it's important that they're recognized. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
I agree. Thank you. You know, that also, while I'm waiting, in case Joe says there's somebody else, it brings up another point that I want to make with everybody. There are a few of you who have reached out to me concerned about potentially having a conflict of interest with who you're reaching out to. I want to be very clear that you do not have a conflict of interest when you're bringing information into the public setting. You're on this board because of your networks and who you know and where things might be, your expertise in your own field and in other ways. So, for example, you know, I mentioned St. Joseph's Hospital. I'm on the board of St. Joseph's Hospital, but I'm not going to be directing whether they get money or they don't get money. I want to make sure that, you know, a voice gets heard. It's an easy call, an easy contact for me. All the information they provide to me will be put in the public setting, and I will disclose, like I just did, that I'm a board member there. You know, should we be asked to make recommendations in a certain way that would make me uncomfortable or feel like it was a conflict, I would absolutely step away from the discussion or the decision if that presented itself. So we do want you reaching out to people that you know. It doesn't matter what your connections might be. You're going to know things that other members on the board don't know. So I just thought I would put that out there as well. Joe, anybody else waiting to weigh in?
Donnelly, we have Michelle McEwen. And again, for other members of the board, 5-star on your dial pad. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi, thank you. And by the time I raised my hand until now, the conversation is going in a direction I'm a little bit more comfortable. But I did want to start with saying I do support the presentation model that you've put out with the 15 minutes. I think it keeps it very efficient, particularly with the written presentation in advance, and allows us to hear from more voices. And I do like the recommendation about whether or not we could sort of focus on a sector or similar sectors on a day, because it's very hard to hear about 4 different sectors in one day and then maybe hear from 4 other different sectors the day after and trying to remember them all. So I think if we could try to organize it in that way, that would be extremely helpful. And the last issue I had, or concern I had, was in regards to whether or not they've already testified at the Legislative Advisory Board and whether they should testify here. And appreciate the others that have chimed in. I do think that our questions will bring them a little bit further than what I've heard being presented to the Legislative Advisory Board. And so I didn't want them excluded from doing verbal presentations. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder, Joe, do you know if they, the people that are testifying before the legislature, I mean, I assume, but I would hate to do that, but they often come in with written testimony. I don't know. I've looked at some of the minutes, but I haven't seen any attachments of any written testimony. But if you do know the answer to that, one way or the other, it might be helpful for us to be able to. So let's just say, as Bill described, BFA comes in, went into the legislative group. They have written testimony. They also are going to answer our 10 questions. It might be valuable for the members of our board to have both of their sets of written testimony, kind of setting a context for things. Wouldn't hurt. I mean, I don't want them to focus on their legislative testimony in our 15-minute time slot, but for the board members to maybe have had an opportunity to understand that and then read the questions might be helpful.
So, Donnelly, my understanding is we're currently in the process of putting the presentations from yesterday up on the website, and of course, getting content up is very important. We're doing it as expeditiously as possible, and we're working on the new website as well to make it more functional and more helpful for folks. So we're really trying to work on that and make sure everybody feels comfortable with the direction things, you know, are going and that people are a part of it.
Okay, great. Thank you, Joe.
And we can announce more when we hear, when I have more details. And Donnelly, we have Al, who's raised his hand. And again, just reminding folks, 5-star on your dial pad.
Hey, Donnelly, this is Al. Just as we were talking here, I went through and did a quick listing of sectors that I saw on the list that we've got here, and I'll send this over to you. It's just a modification of the sheet that you sent out, so it'll give you maybe a little possible starting point on this, but it looks like there are about, initially I saw 12 sectors, so just as a thought, and maybe that could be subdivided out even further with some of the various sections of agriculture and so forth. Another thing I was thinking about is that if there are 30 presenters and everybody's got 15 minutes to present and 15 minutes of questions and a little time in between, we'd be looking at about 18 hours. So if our meetings are two-hour meetings, you're talking about nine meetings, and I'm just mentioning that as a comment. And then just secondly, just as a point of order, I think we have a motion in a second. And
we do.
Yeah, just thought I'd mention that. So that's it.
Yep.
Thanks.
We do. I'm a fan of when you have a motion and a second that you make sure everybody still has time for discussion. So, Joe, anybody else?
Donnelly, we're taking a look at the system right now. There appears to be no hands raised, but again, 5-star, and we have a hand raised from Amy LaBelle. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi there. Again, apologies since this is my first meeting and you may have covered this last time, but should each of us be also preparing written responses to the 11-question format? And second part, the three people that we're reaching out to, should they be in our industries or, you know, should we feel free to reach out to whoever we think would best represent at the committee? Thank you.
So, Amy, you're welcome. Your first question, did you say should we as members of the board be filling out the 11 questions?
Yes, that is my question.
Okay. I don't see that there's any reason why you couldn't. Again, it'll be part of the public record, the context that, you know, your name's on it. They understand that you're representing your industry and these are your thoughts. I also don't think you should only be within your industry. You're welcome to, I mean, anybody's welcome to ask as many people as they would like to present written testimony. I would caution against inviting people to present until, you know, we as a board kind of weigh in and say, yeah, we're going to look at that. The point of the three people was a starting point so that we weren't duplicating efforts to make sure that everybody had different folks that they were reaching out to. But as long as everybody fills out the same 11 questions, discloses their name and, you know, any relationship they have to that, I don't see any problem with it. Anybody else? Am I right about that? Joe, Bill, either one of you want to weigh in?
This is Bill Ardinger. I agree with what you just said. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. I mean, I think, as I said earlier, that's why we're on here, right? So we bring something to the table, and we should put it on the table. Okay. With that, if there's no further discussion about the motion that's on the floor, that...
Oops. Excuse me, Donnelly. I apologize for interrupting you, but we have Scott Mason, who has a hand raised. Go ahead, Scott.
Donnelly, I guess I apologize. I was never anticipating that we would have this many oral presenters from agriculture. That'll be a much smaller list for the oral presenters, but these groups represent different factions within agriculture that I thought it was worth hearing, at least getting written testimony from.
You have no apology to make. I think it's perfectly fine what you've done.
And I also reached out to utilities, and I don't see that on your list.
Yeah, I don't see it on it either. I think that might be because you sent it to me early. So
okay,
No, don't be sorry. Thank you.
And then the other thing, I just did not get time to really put together a cohesive group in the North Country. That will come eventually.
Okay. Is there further discussion on the motion relative to the format that has been described?
Donnelly, we have a hand raised from Holly Noveletsky.
I apologize. It's not about the motion. I just want clarification. On the ones that get submitted directly to the website, those will be disseminated to all of us so that we can at some point discuss them? Is that the process?
That's the plan. But anybody that you reach out to, because the website's not up yet, I do understand that at the end of that question document, it laid out conversation around submitting to the website. Your folks can submit to the website when it's ready. We're hopeful Friday, maybe early next week. But in the meanwhile, if you send it out to them, make sure you ask them to send you back a copy. And then if you send that copy to me as well, I'll make sure that it gets distributed to the committee. I don't want people waiting around for the website to be ready when we want to have presenters ready to go on Tuesday.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. How's the scoreboard look, Joe? Anybody with a hand up?
We are. I apologize, Donnelly. The system seems to be a little slow today, but we appear to have no other hands raised.
Okay. So we have a motion made and seconded. Would you like to call the roll on that, please, Joe?
Absolutely. We're going to be conducting a roll call. Again, for those joining us, this is a duly noticed meeting for the Stakeholder Advisory Board of the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery. This call is being recorded. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may disconnect at any time. We'll begin with the roll call on the motion. We'll be going alphabetically through the board members, starting with Bill Ardinger.
Yes, thank you.
Dean Kristen.
Yes.
Jim Jalbert.
Yes.
Amy LaBelle.
Yes.
Al Letizio Jr.
Yes.
Donnelly Lozo.
Yes.
Scott Mason.
Yes.
Michelle McEwen.
Yes.
Nancy Merrill.
Yes.
Holly Noveletsky.
Yes.
Kathleen Reardon.
Yes.
Benjamin Wilcox.
Yes.
Donnelly, that concludes the roll call. The motion is unanimous in favor.
Great. Thank you so much. So I think we've delved into number four somewhat in the discussion that we've just had. If there are thoughts people have on the first sector they'd like to see on Tuesday, I'm happy to hear about it. I think, Al, thank you for working on dividing it into sectors. We can either have people weigh in on a few that they think should be the early ones into the committee, or we can let me put together a list that I get out and reach out to those of you that have them as your contacts to invite them, or we could do a combination of both. You just, if anybody wants to weigh in on that.
Not following protocol, this is Dean. I think it would be great if you started working on that, Donnelly, and came up with a potential schedule.
Okay. Anybody object to that? Okay.
Ben Wilcox,
right.
Second.
Thank you.
Donnelly, we have a hand raised from Ben Wilcox.
Okay.
I was just seconding that suggestion. And I had another question. One of the questions I think you asked was also who was going to be ready potentially to start this Tuesday. So I assume we would did you get a?
You'll let me know which ones. I do. I think so.
Okay.
I think there's a fair amount. And if that hasn't been delineated on the information that members are sending me that we're putting into this list, please do. Because remember, right, we're asking them, would you answer these written questions? And if asked, would you be able to present? And for some of the ones that you talked to that you believe would be ready for, next week, you're welcome to say, would you be ready as early as next week should you get a call? That's fine, too. But I'm sure that we have easily 4 to 6 people that are going to be ready for Tuesday.
Got it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Donnelly, we have a hand raised from Michelle McEwen.
Hi, thank you. Yes. I just wanted to make sure I heard Donnelly correctly. You were going to sort of put a schedule together of when we would hear from various sectors?
Yes.
I guess my concern is when that will be available, because Tuesday will be here before we know it, and I just want to make sure we're fair to anybody who we ask to present on Tuesday has ample notice and time to prepare.
Agreed. So my hope is it'll be completed midday tomorrow. And hopefully people have already gotten their questions out. I know that I've reached out to my contacts and have already sent them questions. And some of the folks, back to the idea of who's presented and who hasn't, some are going to be more ready than others, I think. So, we might start with that sector that's already up to their elbows on Tuesday and then give others till Thursday. And so I'll probably be reaching out to some of you once we determine, whether we think we have enough folks in a certain area, and then ask if you can assist in reaching out to your contacts to gauge their ability to make that happen.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else?
Donnelly, we don't currently have any hands raised. And if one pops up again, 5-star on your dial pad to raise your hand.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is other business. I don't have any. I don't know if anybody does. Anything that's not on the agenda that they wanted an opportunity to raise? I'll give it a minute.
Donnelly, jumping just a little bit perhaps, this is Bill Ardinger. I have one comment that I'd like to throw on the table.
Okay.
As we saw from one of the emails we got from Joe, the U.S. Treasury Department has issued its guidance on, what these federal dollars in this coronavirus relief fund may be spent on. I think it's fair to say, I was chatting with Joe and Lisa a little bit, that the guidance is very slim. It's not a lot of rules. It leaves quite a few uncertainties. I just wanted to note for our group that the guidance is out there, and we will likely see a lot of discussion about what the meaning of those guidelines what the meaning is or the different meanings are. So I just wanted to put that out there, Donnelly, and let folks know that that's an important document, and there'll probably be more that will be relevant to our thinking about what recommendations we might want to consider making. Thank you.
You're welcome. That gets us to that next meeting item, where we're asking Gopher to present on the federal guidance, whether it's slim or more robust by Tuesday. I'm proposing here on today's agenda that for Tuesday's agenda, we start with that. I would imagine that makes sense to most people, kind of informs work and direction. And then, so if we start our meeting Tuesday at 1 o'clock, I would imagine, you know, around 45 minutes, depending on how slim or robust the guidance is. We'll have that presentation and an opportunity for questions from members, and then we'll move right into the presentations. I will work diligently with Joe to figure out kind of what that timeline might be so that whoever our first presenter may be, that they are ready and understand that we may tell them be ready at 2 o'clock or 1:45, and it may be either may run a little bit longer, but we'll get them on the call. I think until we put the skates on, we're not exactly sure, but we're going to try.
Okay. Donnelly, yes. Forgive me for interrupting. We have Dean with hand raised.
Hi, Dean.
So, Donnelly, I just have a very quick question. I'm assuming that the guidance to people that are filling out these responses, not necessarily the speakers who we're going to accelerate, but the broader networks, is that we want this as soon as possible, but is there a deadline in mind? Do we want to tell people that, you know, they have a week to at max to submit this or something like that? I mean, have you thought about that at all?
No, actually, I hadn't really thought about that. People seem so anxious to provide information, but that's a good point, Dean. So why don't we give some thought to that? And I'm thinking that we might want to have a decision on Tuesday about how long we give folks. Let's see how things come in and then what might be still out there. And it seems to me that when we start reading some of this written testimony, it may beg the question of somebody that, or an industry or a sector or something that we've missed. One of the items that I was looking for is commercial real estate folks. I think, Dean, you and I talked about some of the housing ones, but also the commercial ones that are right out there renting to you know, a strip mall with six stores that are all closed and might not be getting their rent and, you know, what they may be up against. But I do think it's probably a good idea to at least have an initial end date, even if we open it back up at some point or not.
Sure.
Again,
so
I'm trying to be conscious of the time, so.
Appreciate that. So just some guidance on that would be helpful at some point. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Donnelly, we have some hands raised. Sorry, we're just... Our internet's a little slow. It must be a big Netflix day here in Concord. We have Holly with her hand raised.
So if people are allowed to submit for, say, a week out, they may miss the sector presentation that they fit into. Would we be able to allow them to present at the end in a miscellaneous sector group?
Well, I won't say no. You know, it'll be the pleasure of the board. But I think, you know, again, I think we have to see how this plays out in the first week and what's coming in. And then I think we'll have to make a decision on whether we do something else. It might be more than one group, and so we might, you know, more than one sector. And I think it also depends how complex they are. You know what I mean? Like, for instance, I'm going to ask Jim Jalbert to, you know, he knows the private transit, and he's very familiar with transit that happens based on municipalities. But I know that three of my sister community action agencies run public transportation. And while I could reach out to them, I would not be able to clearly understand some of their responses to the degree that would be helpful. But I think Jim could. so that they could send it to him and he could make sure that it's an understandable thing for most of us. So I think that might play into some of it too, you know.
Okay. I'm just thinking it's a short time frame. If we ask people to be ready Tuesday, and we're not sure who we're asking to be ready Tuesday until Friday afternoon.
Right. That's a fair point. Thank you.
Holly, I'm sorry, Donna Lee, we have a question from Jim Jalbert.
Jim, I didn't use your name in vain, but okay, Jim.
No, you didn't, and I'm happy to do that, as we had discussed. But I think it would be premature to try to set a stop date next week. I'd respectfully suggest that we give it a week before we think about that, because we don't know what we're the volume that we're going to see. We don't know how it's going to continue to backfill. And I think one of the things I get concerned about is that while we really want to do a good job and we want to bring in people who can give us an overview of what's going on in the state, like what's happening tomorrow with the Charitable Foundation in Concord, we need to have enough time to listen to the people who are really impacted and make sure that we don't lose track of their individual needs and try to get this money out. But I think it's going to take a long time to do that. I mean, it's my understanding it's got to be out into the recipient's hands in its entirety before the end of the year. To accomplish that, we may need to leave the window open a little longer. So all I would ask is, instead of coming to a definitive date on next Tuesday, let's give it about a week before we come back and do that and see what the backfill looks like.
Another good point. Thank you. Anybody else?
Donnelly, we don't have any hands raised currently, but again, as a reminder, 5-star on your dial pad to raise your hand. Again, 5-star on your dial pad.
Okay. Looks to me like we might be in pretty good shape, and class can get out early to do your homework. We all certainly have a fair amount of that to do. Anybody else going once? Twice? All right. Thank you, everybody, for your participation and your input. And I'm each day I feel a little bit better about getting our arms around responsibilities. Thanks so much, and we will talk to you Tuesday at 1 o'clock.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this concludes a duly noticed meeting for the Stakeholder Advisory Board to the Governor's Office of Emergency Relief and Recovery. Again, this meeting has been recorded. Looking at the time, it is 3:15 p.m. Thank you.